Major funding for Soundings comes from the National Endowment for the Humanities. From the National Humanities Center, this is Wayne Pond with Soundings, conversations featuring scholars and visitors at the center. The National Humanities Center is an independent, nonprofit institute that encourages excellence in scholarship and affirms the importance of the humanities in American life. Me and My Baby View the Eclipse, conversation and readings featuring Lee Smith this week on Soundings. Lee Smith is the author of novels and short story collections that include Cakewalk, Black Mountain Breakdown, Fair and Tender Ladies, and Family Linen. Her most recent collection of stories is Me and My Baby View the Eclipse, published by G.P. Putnam's Sons. Lee Smith, always a pleasure to have you at the National Humanities Center. You've got a wonderful new collection here, Me and My Baby View the Eclipse.
Thank you.
Great title.
Thank you.
Let's begin with some generalities. Did you have a kind of an overall aim when you wrote this book, The New South, The Old South? Does any of that stuff matter to you as a writer?
It matters to me, yeah. But actually, I'm one of these short story writers that is just simply compelled to write a story from time to time. I mean, and when a story hits me, whether I'm in the middle of a novel or a divorce or, you know, anything, I just have to write a story. So these are just simply stories that were written over a period of time.
Uh-huh.
Do seem to kind of go together, but I think that's just because, you know, your life sort of happens in eras.
Right.
You know.
Did you say errors or eras?
Both. But I mean, you know, in any given sort of period of your life, if you look back on it later, kind of has a theme.
Uh-huh. Lee, do you think of yourself as a sociologist of the South? Is that too highfalutin?
That's kind of highfalutin. I would put John Shelton Reed in that in that category.
Right.
But I really do think about myself as the person who does research. I mean, it's the kind of research that's real hard to explain. But I do spend an awful lot of time observing people and writing things down and hanging out in shopping malls.
Yeah, do you have to do this sort of undercover? I mean, your friends must, in a way, they must run when they see you coming. You've got that damn notebook, and you're going to be putting them into stories.
Well, not too much.
Really?
People love to tell you their stories. That's the thing that is, well, see, I started out as a newspaper reporter, Wayne, mm-hmm. and that, I think, has really heavily inform the kind of fiction I write, because I just love to get people talking and sort of listen to what they say. And what I come up with is usually a combination. Mm-hmm. It's never just that person.
Well, tell me about the dialogue, for example. How do you recreate that? Again, we're going to come to some specifics, and I'll have you read a passage or two. Do you, the word invention, the word imagination, the word recollection, how do they all play together?
I think it's maybe ear.
Just that. Uh-huh. Just that.
I think, yeah. I don't think it has anything to do with intelligence. I really don't. It's just kind of, I don't know. You know, I teach a lot, and I've taught for years. I've taught a lot of creative writing, and there are some people that can just transcribe the way conversation sounds.
Mm-hmm.
And there are other people that can't.
Well, let me get you to pause on an example. One of these stories is called Dreamers.
Right.
About a young married couple, St. Mary's College over in Raleigh, North Carolina. We got a day laborer who, in effect, picks up one of the co-eds.
Exactly.
How did you hear those two kids talking and sharing this dream that is the point of the story?
Well, I know a couple of boys that are like the boy in the story.
Uh-huh.
And also, I know some girls who go to exclusive girls' schools.
Uh-huh.
And it just sort of really interested me.
So you decided to bring them together.
To throw them together.
Uh-huh.
To me, in general, the place a story happens is the point where expectation or illusion kind mm-hmm. of comes flat up against reality.
Uh-huh.
Which is the point those young people are getting to.
Well, let's push the psychologizing a little bit mm-hmm. A little bit further, Lee Smith. Give me a sense of the mix there. You know, this invention.
Well, I really do. I think Wayne, it goes back to, I think, because I do work with a lot of young writers. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you're young, when you're writing in your 20s, say, what you're writing is essentially autobiography. Mm-hmm. What you're telling first is your story.
Now, are you doing that?
Which is why you want to write. I'm too old. I did that for a while, and then I used up my life, is what I'm telling you. So what I have to do is a certain amount of research, of looking at real people, listen to real people, whether they're on national, you know, whether they're on the Nashville Network, mm-hmm. say on TV, or whether they're in Harris Teeter or whatever, right. And then combining them, throwing in some characteristics of my own. So I don't ever end up with anybody that anyone could say there's a one-to-one relationship. It's a kind of a mix, but right. I can't anymore. I don't really write autobiographical things at all, because I sort of, is what leads you to write when you're young.
Got that behind you.
But see, I think it's real hard to get that behind you. It was a big step for me, and I think that's why a lot of us are one-book writers.
Uh-huh. What about the dialogue? Is it possible that some critic or some citizen out there in North Carolina someplace would ever say, Lee Smith, you took that line straight out of my mouth. You were standing behind me in the Harris Teeter. Does that happen?
Yeah. But it'll usually, if I do that, it'll be somebody I know. Uh-huh. And I'll just tell them. Like, one of my friends told me she has a grandmother whose mind wanders, and the grandmother thinks that she gets phone calls from the beyond, you know. And she was telling me one day, she said her grandmother came in and said she'd gotten a phone call from hell. And I just love that. So I put it in. I think it's in oral history or something. But, you know, I'll usually tell people, and they'll say, oh, good. They don't mind a bit.
All right, let's look at one of these stories. I'm going to ask you to read me a passage, and then we'll
All
talk
right.
about it.
Let me read to you from Tongues of Fire.
All right.
The year I was 13, 1957, my father had a nervous breakdown, my brother had a wreck, and I started speaking in tongues. The nervous breakdown had been going on for a long time before I knew anything about it. Then one day that fall, Mama took me downtown in the car to get some Baskin-Robbins ice cream, something she never did. And while we were sitting on the curly chairs facing each other across the little white table, Mama took a deep breath, licked her red lipstick, leaned forward in a very significant way, and said, Karen, you may have noticed that your father is not himself lately.
Tell me about this little girl here. This is the year that she turns 13. Her name mm-hmm. is Karen. Who is she?
Well, now, she's probably me. She probably is as close to a portrait of the kind of little girl I was.
Uh-huh. Did you ever speak in tongues?
Well, no, but I was dying to. I had a friend from out in the county where I was from who had a mother who spoke in tongues.
Uh-huh.
And I used to get to go to church with them and hear her mother do this. And then she would pass out and we'd have to lay her right down.
Are you making fun of religion in this story?
No,
You're
I
not.
Want it.
Okay.
No, I want it. And the great sort of one of the big kind of crises of my life was that I just never could actually have that kind of visitation, have mm-hmm. that kind of intensity. Mm-hmm. That was really what I was after as a child. And in the story also has a lot to do with reading, because the kind of child I was is like Karen. I was just a voracious reader. And what I was after there was a sort of the peak experience, the kind of intensity and emotion. And in my own life, I've continued to go to church and to read and to write and so on. And mm-hmm. I think that's always one thing I'm after.
All right. Now, this little girl, Karen, in this story, Tongues of Fire, has something of a religious experience. She mm-hmm. gets baptized. Clarify my memory here. Does she ever actually herself speak in tongues?
No.
She doesn't.
She
hooks up with somebody named Tammy Lester.
Right.
who represents what another kind of experience for her? What's going on there?
Well, I guess this is all about, the whole story is about the kind of intensity that's possible to you at 13 or 14. And there's the intellectual, there's the reading, okay, and then there's the religion. And Tammy Lester is sex and boys and drive-in movies.
Smoking
and you know, all that kind of people that live in trailers. I mean, all that kind of stuff. So this is about, I guess, Karen's exposure to all of these kinds of things.
Uh-huh.
And she does think she speaks in tongues once, but I would say if we were a shrink, we would probably say she just got a little hysterical at camp.
Right. One of the among the buzzwords in the academy these days, we have race, class, and gender. Mm-hmm. Now here we have class at work.
Yeah,
in this story,
we
and
do.
Gender and mm-hmm. gender. How conscious, Lee Smith, of those things are you when you write stories like Tongues of Fire?
Not a bit.
Good.
I think if you get, you know, because if you start thinking, well, I'm going to write a story about the clash between the genteel culture and the. And the you know, the more redneck element and blah blah blah. You can't write.
Right.
You can't write. And also your characters are not like real people. They're like cartoons with these balloons coming out that are pro and con. You know, I have tried several times to write things to make strong thematic statements that I really wanted to make, and it's mm-hmm. been bad fiction.
Well, now you make
a pretty
strong statement about the modern romance in a little parody that you have. The collection is Me and My Baby View the Eclipse, and the parody here got a great title, Desire on Domino Island.
Yeah, they love alliteration.
All right, what's going on here in this?
Well, I just get so tired of going in the drugstore and mm-hmm. seeing, you know, rack after rack of these books with the women with their bosoms hanging out, racing toward castles and storm clouds in the sky.
Bodice rippers,
and the fact that so many, particularly women, so many readers in this country are addicted to these things. And why is it? It's a very interesting kind of a question. You know, why aren't they reading good stuff? Why do they want this pablum, you know, the
formula? Are you making fun of this audience? Are you trying to educate it? What are you doing in
this? I'm sort of examining it, I think. Mm-hmm. And as I said in the preface to the story, I decided I was going to write one of these. My friend and I,
Kathy Kern.
Yeah, we decided we were going to write one, and hers was pretty damn good. And mine, I just couldn't keep a straight
word
face.
Processor.
I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
So I ended up writing the parody. But it was real interesting to me because the narrative formula there works.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it works. It's some of the oldest tried and true storytelling technique, and it's very interesting mm-hmm. to look at it and see. I mean, it's Jane Eyre. You know,
right.
It works. But the language is finally what is so schlocky. And the implications that people are so one-dimensional,
mm-hmm.
I think. And so that's what I guess the whole thing is. The people in the other stories, there is an eclipse, and they take account of it.
Right.
You know, and in that parody, there's no eclipse.
That's
things
right.
are going to be fine.
Well, let's save me and my baby view the eclipse for the end of our conversation.
Right.
But a point that you raised just now, Lee Smith, intrigues me. You talked about Jane Eyre, and however tortured or tenuous, the connection between a book like Jane Eyre and then this wonderful parody that you have in your collection, Desire on Domino Island. Do you think of yourself as belonging to a tradition? How do you say, I'm going to contribute to the tradition?
No.
Dun, 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 dun. How does
Again,
that work?
See, if you get too conscious of what you're doing, you can't do anything.
Uh-huh.
That's the problem. And that's particularly the problem for those of us who also teach literature classes, because I love to do that. But you have to take off your hat, your literature teacher hat, when you sit down to write. You have to not know what you're doing
uh-huh.
to some extent.
You have to not know what you're doing.
I mean, I do have an outline. I do have a general plan. I have the characters worked out. But then you just have to sort of forget yourself
mm-hmm.
and forget things like that a tree is a male symbol or something. Just forget all that kind of stuff and just throw yourself into it.
Who's your best reader? Who's your best critic when you're trying to get a sense of how well you're doing?
I think I'm incredibly fortunate because really my best critic happens to be my editor,
mm-hmm.
whose name is Faith Sale, and this book is dedicated to her.
Indeed.
And she really edits. I mean, she reads so carefully,
mm-hmm.
and she really, really.
You ever get mad at her for suggestions that she makes? How does that relationship work between you?
No,
and
because she doesn't really make suggestions so much as just ask a lot of questions.
I see.
And the questions she asks are very specific and really important. And if she has them to ask, it usually means that there's something that's not quite there yet
mm-hmm.
in the story.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, Wayne, when any, I don't think any writer ever gets to the point where we don't need editing and a lot of editing, because, I mean, I can take somebody else's manuscript and I think help them improve it significantly, but I cannot look at my own and think of anything else to do with it. I never can. And I think, I don't, I mean, I think that every writer is like that. And I think what happens tragically to some writers who become really famous is that people stop editing them.
And they just write it and it goes right into print.
And consequently, books that could have been incredible are not quite as good as they should have been. Uh-huh. And I think probably the simplest and best thing that an editor does is they just kind of let you know when you're telling too much and when you're not telling enough.
Mm-hmm. What about,
which
for example,
key.
Again, you have a lot of women in these mm-hmm. stories in this collection, Me and My Baby View the Eclipse. Are you a feminist? Do you you bring that consciously to the work and say?
Well, I try not to bring it consciously to the work. I mean, mm-hmm. I do think of myself very definitely as a feminist.
And what's the objective of the feminism in the fiction?
Well, see, again, I try to not
you don't
go at it from a thematic point of view.
Right.
But these stories, I think I would have to say, and I try not to be analytical about my own work ever, but they are largely about women who are trying to find themselves, oftentimes women who have been stuck in long, loveless marriages, who were stuck with children, who are not prepared to enter the workforce, who or who have been wrapped up in the romantic notion that a man will come and save them.
Is that what the eclipse is? Is that what you're getting them beyond in this collection?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Well, let's talk about one of these women. There's a story called Mom.
Yeah.
The character's name is Gloria Anderson. She's got this sort of semi-obnoxious son named Buddy. And she gets, she gets left is what happens to her. Richard, mm-hmm. her husband, leaves her, and he says, "Life as we knew it is a thing of the past."
Isn't that a good line?
Yeah, it's a great line. Why did you put it in the mouth of a man?
Huh?
Why did you give that to a male character? Tell me about what's going on there.
In this particular story, again, I think that Southern women are, including myself, are absolute world experts at denial. Of all kinds.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, my mother said once about one of her neighbors, she said, well, if a car ran over, she wouldn't act like it hurt unless she felt like it.
Yeah, in one of the stories, you've got Mama's Rules, isn't that it?
That's Mama, right, How to Be a Lady.
And a silence never falls.
Never let a silence fall.
Right.
Never discuss any of your problems or allude to them in any way or recognize them in any way. You know, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And
so this is the New South. This is the South opening up after a fashion.
Yeah, it uh-huh. is. And in Mom, which was a real, and I have done a lot of work with various kinds of chemical dependency groups and teenagers groups and various kinds of things. And it's about denial, in that Mom there, can't realize that her son is in real trouble, and that the best thing she could do for him would be to quit supporting him and quit supporting his habit. But she's like a number of the other women in the book. She just keeps on sort of giving and giving and closing her eyes.
Would you call this therapy, Lee Smith? Are you a therapist for your readers?
Not for my readers, probably for myself.
Uh-huh.
I do think, you know, that that's one thing that happens when you, as a writer, when you look back at what you've written, you can see how a lot of times you're working out your own ideas, your own problems, your own notions
mm-hmm.
in
mm-hmm.
your stories. And
mm-hmm.
it's like, I think I write stories sometimes the way other people write in journals. You know, because this whole notion of denial, and if something's bad, don't talk about it,
and stuff it down is something
that Southern women my age have really are having to get over.
Tell me about Cherry Oxendine. She's the heroine, I guess is the word, the main figure in a story called Intensive Care.
Yeah.
Cherry gets involved with Harold Stikes. What
mm-hmm.
what about Harold and Cherry? What happens to them?
Well, this is a great tragic story. Harold leaves his wife and family, and again, that was a very static, sort of stultifying marriage, I guess.
So he's the one getting out here.
Yeah, he leaves them for Cherry Oxendine, who's one of the wild girls of the town. Been, and there, every little small town has got a couple who've been married a couple of times.
She works in the deli.
Yeah, she's got a great sense of humor. She's funny. She's tough, you know, and so on. And he leaves it all for Cherry Oxendine, and then she gets cancer.
Yeah, she finds she's going to die.
But almost at the moment of her death, says that it was worth it. And I don't know, Wayne, again, that particular story, that's all about Cherry and Harold and so on, but I have to say, oddly enough, I wrote that story shortly after my mother's death. And I had spent a lot of time, she was in intensive care for like 11 weeks.
Oh, goodness.
And I had spent a lot of time talking to all the people, you know, all the families that were in there while they're... people in their family were in intensive care and all this various stuff. And so somehow that story comes out of that experience. And I really couldn't tell you how. And there's no mother in the story. But somehow it was helpful for me to write that story.
She's what we used to call a composite character.
Yeah, I guess so. Mm-hmm. You never know where this stuff comes from.
Let's talk about the title story, Me and My Baby View the Eclipse.
Yeah. This is really, again, you call me a sort of a closet sociologist, and maybe I am.
That wasn't an accusation.
That's probably true. But it has long seemed to me that there is, in every small southern town, there is somebody, and sometimes it's the organist for the church, or a piano teacher, or it might be a man who's an English teacher in the high school, or a florist. Or whatever,
In this case, it's Raymond.
In this case, it's Raymond.
Ramon.
It was a florist in the town I grew up in, who is just not like the other men in town. He's more sensitive. You know, he might write poetry, or he might make flower arrangements, or he might consult with you on how to put on a wedding. You know what I mean? And, of course, naturally, everybody else in town, all the men think he's gay.
Right.
But he's not. You know, and he oftentimes offers some of the women, not necessarily a romance, but
a romance about a romance,
know. In this case, Sharon, who was a housewife with three children, actually has a real romance with Raymond, who is very different from everybody she has ever known.
He's fond of saying things like, me and my baby... go eat ice cream. Me and my baby do this, that, and the other thing.
He sort of frames his life in a dramatic way.
He tells her a story.
He tells her a story all the time, and she's in it. And she comes to see herself as a much more interesting person because she's in it. And with the thing, when there's going to be an eclipse, he wants them to dress up and sit out in the backyard and sip champagne and view the eclipse.
read to us from this story,
okay. Well, now, this is just kind of what they're both like. This is a paragraph from the middle of the story, which sort of gives us a notion of their relationship. Raymond was an ardent, imaginative lover. Sometimes he brought her some candy from the pharmacy. Sometimes he brought flowers. Once he brought her a butterfly, still alive, and kissed her on the mouth when she let it go. Sometimes he dressed up for her. He'd wear one of his father's pinstripe suits, or a Panama hat and army green Bermuda shorts with eight pockets, or a dashiki and sandals, or mechanic's coveralls with Mike stitched on the pocket, or jeans and a Jack Daniels cap. Honestly, Sharon would say, because Raymond thought she was beautiful, she came to like her large, soft body. She loved the way he made everything seem so special. She loved the way he talked, his high-pitched, zany laugh, and how he stroked her tumbling hair. He was endlessly fascinated by how she spent her day, by all the dumb details of her life. You know what Ann Tyler said? This is a really good line.
Tell me.
Somebody asked her why she writes, and she said, because I want to have more than one life.
You feel
that
way?
I think is wonderful. Yeah, because see, I mean, you do this kind of stuff, and you get to be these people. Because, I mean, when you get to be my age, you know, I'm 45 years old. I'm not going to do anything. I'm not going to do all this stuff. I wouldn't act like this. You know, but you get to, sort of. It's like having your cake, you know, and eating it, too.
Mm-hmm.
I think.
Let's move toward a conclusion of our conversation, Lee Smith. What does it mean to you to be a writer, a woman, in the so-called New South? Does all of that tie itself up together in your fiction?
Well, I think it really does. Again, my work has been criticized justly for not maybe having enough men characters, not portraying enough strong male characters and so on. But, you know, I'm a woman and I spend a lot of time talking to other women. And I grew up hearing women just talking. And so when stories present themselves to me, a lot of times it is through a woman's consciousness. They are told in a woman's voice. And I think the most fertile ground for any fiction is always in the midst of change. Because, you know, if the situation is static, there's no story.
Has there ever been a time when we haven't been in transition?
Well, I guess not. But right now, in the South.
Lee Smith, your most recent collection is Me and My Baby View the Eclipse. Thanks for stopping by the Humanities Center.
Thank you.
Lee Smith is the author of Fancy Strut and Oral History. Her most recent collection of stories is Me and My Baby View the Eclipse, published by G.P. Putnam Sons. Lee Smith is at work on a novel about country music. The program is Soundings. This is Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center. Soundings on the Fiction of Lee Smith is available on cassette. Send $5 to the National Humanities Center, Research Triangle Park, North Carolina. The zip is 27709. Ask for program number 529. That's program number 529. The address again is the National Humanities Center, Research Triangle Park, North Carolina. The zip once again, 27709. When writing, please mention the call letters of this radio station. The National Humanities Center is eager to hear your comments about Soundings. Next week, a discussion about manners in the United States during the 19th century. John Casson will talk about his new book, Rudeness and Civility. John Casson is a professor of history at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Soundings concludes now with Timeline, a weekly cultural retrospective. Happy anniversary this week to the Gettysburg Address, delivered by President Lincoln in November 1863. 55 years ago this week, a Pan Am Martin 130 flying boat called the China Clipper began regular trans-Pacific mail service. 12 years ago this week, more than 900 people lost their lives in the murder-suicide at the People's Temple in Jonestown, Guyana. Three presidents of the United States have birthdays this week: Zachary Taylor in 1784, Franklin Pierce in 1804, and James Garfield in 1831. President John F. Kennedy was murdered in November 1963, as was his younger brother Robert in November of 1968. Birthdays this week include the cartoonist Chester Gould, the explorer George Rogers Clark, the physicist and inventor Louis-Jacques Daguerre, the pollster George Gallup, the librettist W.S. Gilbert, the criminologist Cesare Lombroso, the novelists Lawrence Stern and George Eliot, the philosophers Baruch Spinoza and Jean-Francois Voltaire, the killer Billy the Kid, the aviator Wiley Post, and the musician Hoagy Carmichael. Finally, this week marks an anniversary for the debut of Mickey Mouse, who first appeared before American audiences in November of 1928 at the Colony Theater in New York City. Thanks for listening to Soundings. Until next week, this is Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center. Major funding for Soundings comes from the National Endowment for the Humanities. Me and My Baby View the Eclipse, readings and discussion featuring writer Lee Smith this week on Soundings. This is Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center. Lee Smith's books include Cakewalk, Black Mountain Breakdown, and Fair and Tender Ladies. Her newest collection of stories is Me and My Baby View the Eclipse, The New South, The Old South, Feminism and Contemporary Fiction. Some answers and insights from the National Humanities Center this week on Soundings.